Let's roll. This is Countercharge, your podcast for all things Kings of War. Join your hosts Andrew, Mark, and Rob as they delve into the world of Mantica and bring you in-depth coverage of all things Kings of War.
Welcome to an edition of Countercharge. Tonight, we have an interview with Chris Walsh. Originally, this was planned to be part of an episode with Dan King about Clash of Kings, but because we had some difficulty connecting with Chris and some of the sound quality is not up to our usual level, I figured I would put this out as a single episode, and if folks found it too distracting, they can just move on to the next episode. So I hope you enjoy it. If you can get through it, it's some really, really great content here, so enjoy. So Chris, what have you been up to lately?
I've been spending all my free waking hours painting up my Undead army for Clash of Kings for last week. Included quite a dash for the finish near the end when I realized I had around 3 regiments to go and 2 weeks to do it. And I'm usually a very slow painter by my nature. So, yeah, frantic late nights painting giant worms.
They look fantastic, though.
Oh, thank you very much.
What do you got planned for the rest of 2016?
Well, I think I'm going to go to one more tournament, which is a smaller tournament at Black Dragon in Hinckley. They're doing a Clocks of War style one where it's going to be around 1,200 points, but 6 games in a day. So I'm quite looking forward to that and reorganizing, still taking my undead and sort of reorganizing it and maybe sort of take a few different characters, I think, and also just having, you know, it'll be quite fun. I think it's a place where I often go to play, so I know everyone there.
What about 2017? I know that's a long ways off, but what do you kind of have planned for next year?
Yeah, what I want to do is to, I think, expand a bit more on the undead, put a few more units in so I get a few more options. I mean, Clash of Kings not only was my first tournament, but it was really my first time playing with undead. First day. So I think I've learned a lot from that and to add a few, I would like to add a few more. It's not, you know, I'm not all about competition, but it would be nice to get maybe a bit more competitive and then also fleshing out a bit more. I want to add a few more units, my Force of Nature, so I can occasionally take them to a tournament and maybe try a different army setup, just, you know, to keep on change and keep things fresh. If everything also goes well, I've got an army of old Warhammer gods. Goblin, my old Games Workshop Dark Elves, I'd like to rebase to bring in 4 Kings of War. And then I'm already drawing up in my mind's eye plans for my Clash of Kings 2017 army of what it will be and what it should look like.
Well, let's go ahead and jump right in and talk about Clash of Kings. How many Clash of Kings have you been to? Was this your first one? No, not possible.
This is my first big one since they became a big thing. They used regional in England, and I went to quite a few back in version 1, but this is the first time I went to the sort of, you know, the big.
Well, how did you finish in the other events previous to this?
They're very different stuff. Because it was so much smaller, I've usually finished quite happily in the top 4, but when there's only 7 players, it's not necessarily, you know, the biggest thing. I'm sure at one of the regionals once on a time, I even actually won one, but those were, again, back. I can't completely claim it down to my gaming prowess, because that was back in the day when unicorns were most imbalanced things, and they were basically stools with shiny horns on the front of the head, and they chased everything around the board and basically beat the snot out of the rest of the army whilst everything else just watched. So, not so much technical prep, but yeah, I played a few and did okay at them.
Did you travel to this Clash of Kings with some club mates, or how did you get there?
Look, it's not very far away from where I live. I live in the Midlands in England, which by its name is in the middle of everywhere. So it's not England, very different obviously to America. So even the furthest tournament away usually is more than 2.5 hours drive. And this actually, it's only up for me by car to get to Clash of Kings now and a bit. So I just potted up myself in the morning.
Oh, that's nice. So you don't suffer from a lot of traffic there in the Midlands then?
Oh, no, we do. We like to keep all the cars in the Midlands. We like to keep them firmly on the M6, not moving in a line. So tons of traffic, but equally traveling at 7:30 in the morning on Saturday, there wasn't that much around. So I happened to nip up there. So, it wasn't so bad at all getting there.
There you go. So did you travel with club mates or did you just go solo?
No, just by myself. No one else from my area. I chatted to my from a local game group, and none of them, I think, wanted to go this year. Although I think there's hopefully going to be more of a surge for to go next year. And equally, as far as I'm aware, no one wanted to go. I probably just abandoned them and left them by the roadside as they were definitely wanting to attend, but none of them wanted to go.
Well, we had an excellent turnout this year, 75 players, which is fantastic. I think they sold out at 80 and had 5 drop. So, maybe we'll go to 100 next year.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely amazing. Biggest tournament I've ever attended of any game system I've ever played. And the sanctuary where it was held, which is by far my favorite venue in the country, just like the way it looks. It's the first time I think I've seen it properly filled, and it was great. It was a good atmosphere. A lot of people, we've known each other before from the scene growing up, but even then, I think it was all new. I played 6 games, and everyone was brand new to me. And we had people from attendance from Norway and Spain. I think we had a few guys from France. So it really did feel like sort of the European championships more than just the UK.
Oh, that's fantastic. So there wasn't a language barrier or anything with the games?
No, everyone spoke actually English very well. And I mean, I think there was one or two of the chaps I played, obviously it wasn't their sign language, but it's the joy of how full Kings of War is, you're pretty much aware what everyone's doing. And, we all swapped armies from the beginning, so, even if it wasn't an army you'd played before, exactly what everything was doing and going on. So really, they said no problems, and I don't think rules questions came up once in the whole tournament, which norm.
Oh, that's fantastic. So you did swap lists there right before you played each game.
Yeah, so it's all open lists, and usually it's quite almost unusual in England, where most people use, of course, Easy Army, and everyone brings spare copies of their list. So usually, the first thing you do is, as you, get to the table, somebody, you swap lists, so they've got a copy of yours and yours of theirs, and you take each other through the army. I mean, especially important for me as I'm trying to explain what all the weird models I've got actually are supposed to represent. And as you go through them, you can just quickly refer to your little piece of paper to say what everything is. So, like I said, even if it was armies which you weren't used to playing that much, nothing is a surprise.
Oh, there you go. So the sanctuary was large enough to accommodate the event this year then?
Yeah, I mean, it's a huge old church. It's usually bloody cold. It still was. I mean, my greatest hope was, with 80 players in it, it was finally going to heat up. But, church to church, it still stayed reasonably cold. But I think by Sunday morning, everyone was so hungover that you just didn't feel it.
Well, I guess if they can, the sanctuary hold 100, do you think they'll have to move to a larger venue?
There were a few days. I think it could hold 100, but maybe not hold 100 comfortably. It held 80, and there were still sort of spare tables, people with bags and stuff and coats on, and for to spread out the buffet, and it was a mighty buffet, fantastic stuff done at the Tour de Tires. Great spread laid on, good organised tournament actually throughout. But I wonder if it's going to get much bigger, we might need an even bigger venue. Especially if they want to get over 100, I'm not sure that's target. They probably could do it. Now, I heard that near the end, people were on the Facebook group desperately looking for tickets. So yeah, if it got much bigger, we might need even a bigger space.
If you do move to a bigger event, though, you certainly lose some of the charm that the Sanctuary brings.
Yeah, there's really another place like it, to be honest. I mean, it's very epic. For places, playing fantasy war games, it sort of fits the theme. Plus, it's got good actually local facilities. I mean, there's things like hotels are within walking distance, and the great pub which we use is sort of venue after the stay over the road, where Boozle's Dirt, you said, obviously fell over the road after finishing their final games, and. To say that we all crawled home is probably not an exaggeration. I think Dan had to probably be carried home, and that's quite an undertaking. But I was astounded that he even managed to turn up on Sunday. So kudos to him. As he managed to finish as high as he did, it's just amazing.
Absolutely. Hey, why don't you walk us through this list? I know that you haven't played a lot of Undead, but what'd you put in there? Because I know you've had a few different choices that a lot of folks haven't been seeing very much.
I went for a Regiment Skeleton Warriors, a bit of chaff, a Spearman Horde with the Giant and Dead Rats, again, a bit of chaff for the anvil. I went for a Regiment of Revenants, and I swapped out the shields for double-handed weapons. A Horde of Zombie Trolls, two regiments of Revenant Cavalry, and both of them patrol for Revenants had no magic items on at all. Three Balefire Catapults, a Revenant King on mounted on Undead Steed, two Revenant Kings on the Undead Worms. I didn't take Fly, they are ground worms. I then had a Necromancer with the Inspiring Talisman, and finally the Lycanus with Blade of the Beast Slayer to put him up to Crushing Four against monstrous target.
Fantastic. How did you develop the list? Did you get some feedback for some folks? Did you have Dan King write it for you? Did you just throw a bunch of units in the hat? Did you just use the models you had? Where did this list come from?
Yeah, it was a bit of a mad process. Part of it was actually controlled by what I wanted to paint. The largest part was actually controlled by what I wanted to paint. And I then sort of thought about tactics and how it would work on the table and secondary. I was sort of enjoying making large monsters. I had this massive, great, unclean one from my Games Workshop days, which had been sitting around on my table unpainted, staring at me for years. So I was like, okay, how can I incorporate you? And it was sort of an organic thing from, again, the bits of Mantic stuff and things I'd accumulate as well as sort of fun project. There was a bit of forethought. I had played a lot of Undead Armies, and so I, to begin with, came up with the idea that I see everything in the army, or the army I was going to make, is chaff. There was no big vampire on Undead Dragon with magic items, which would be infinite loss, and that'd be tough on survival. I thought, well, I'll go for lots and lots of units, keep everything nice and cheap, as much surge as possible, because I did surging for my Force of Nature days and how powerful that was, and I thought, actually, well, if I'm going to get anything done, I'm going to get any games won, it's probably going to be through tricky surges and people not noticing where I'm going to be charging from, and then that was it. Just try to unit it all up. I've got to admit, having taken it to the table, and certainly from my I learned a lot very quickly about what it can do, and there's a lot it can't do.
Was there any standout units in the list?
With everything between, strangely, yeah, I would say nothing actually caused much damage. It turns out there's no real ability to impact. The Revenant King on Undead Steed is incredibly to kill. And a lot of times he greatly helped my game by just holding up huge amounts of points on my, you know, regiments and whole sides. The Lycanus as well, incredibly great unit. But I think actually it's more, I found it was more intimidating to my opponent than it actually did. It never really did that much damage, but I think the fear of Lycanus, because it gets behind your line so quickly, so nimble, kept on spinning and turning units and desperately trying to, you know, box him down and close him down, that it took a lot of points away from the scenario we were playing on the rest of my army. So they were good standout units. The rest of the army, including even the Undead Worms, which I really wanted those Undead Worms to be fantastic. And they were good, but they weren't good at what I thought they were. They're not very good at combat or damage or anything like that. What they're very good at is surviving, and they're actually very useful for searching. But it was not how I expected they would play.
What about units that just didn't live up to the hype?
Catapults. Who would have thought? Yeah. I don't think they did anything. In my first game, I think they actually managed to take out a unit in my first two turns, and so I was lulled in a false sense of superiority with them. I'm like, my God, why are people not taking these? These catapults are fantastic. No, it turns out they're garbage, absolute garbage. but I did then work out that the threat of them, again, like the Lycanus, is far more potent than the actual damage they did. I kind of, by the end of the turn, if I deployed all three of them together as a little battery, they still wouldn't hit anything, or they wouldn't break. They wouldn't be doing any real damage. They're causing the odd waver here or there, which probably upsetting my opponent's plans, not destroying them. But people would really avoid, if they were put on one flank, all three of them together, people would avoid that flank and position all their units well out of the way and, actually be causing traffic jams amongst their own force just for fear of being in their range. And I was more than happy to pretend they were good at something. But, they were more useful at allowing me to push other people's units around than actually doing any damage.
Hindsight's 20/20. You knew now what you know. If you were to play Clash of Kings again, what would that list look like?
If I was going to... one would say I had immense fun with my list. I was playing Force of Nature for so long and refining that to as competitive an army as I can sort of make with Mollahead. This army was a breath of fresh air and it was so much fun to play. But if I was going to make it more competitive, I certainly would drop all three catapults. I would take, definitely, I'd probably drop the Lycanus as well. And I would take a vampire on a steed to begin with. I would certainly use more magic items because, and we'll come and talk about this, but the Clash of Kings this year had a lot of terrain on the board, which I actually think was a good thing. But I remember turning up and in the first 5 minutes looking at the boards going, this is a very bad time to quit using the nature because everything was terrain. And it had a huge effect on the game, not only with firing lines, but speed that everything moved. And I didn't think to bring Potion of the Caterpillar on either of my units of Renown Cavalry. And so they spent the entire game being hindered, or even when I was searching them in, hitting fives with no funding. So the biggest change would certainly begin with the catapults, probably drop the Lycanus, get a vampire, put him on a steed, magic items to boost the effectiveness on things. I'd probably still keep the worms. I don't think by themselves they weren't game-changing or game-winning, but I think with a couple of magic items to boost them up and, maybe armor increase for one and regeneration for the other, then they become real pains in the ass for people. They become very hard to take down. And actually, I think that would be worth it. That would give me enough time to urge people around the side and take people out. So that's what I'd do if I was playing again tomorrow.
Yeah, I didn't think that heavy cavalry came without the caterpillar potion. I think that's the only way I've ever seen it played.
I just assume in Manticore, some poor elf, you know, some poor elf apocry whose entire life is to churn out potion of the caterpillar time after time after time again.
Well, let's quickly go over your games, because newsflash, you don't just paint, you actually are a pretty decent player too. So who did you rock up and play in game one?
First game was against one of the guys who came over from Spain. Had a marvelous name. I apologize if I get it wrong. I think it's Nacho Abilio. And he brought oats. We're playing pillage. And he brought, I made a quick drop from what I remember. He had two Siegebreaker hordes. Two boomer hordes, two shooter hordes, two hordes of red goblin spitters, an army standard bearer, which I think had the diadem of dragonkind, and three red goblin blasters.
That's interesting. Red goblin blasters. How did you fare against them?
Yeah, I was a bit shocked to see them because, you know, it like my cast bolts, everyone's like, they red goblin blasters. So, but a very heavily trained board, lots of hedges, you know, big impassable terrain, house on one side, and then sort of swamps and hills. Interesting thing which actually had a big effect on Clash of Kings, that all hills were declared height one instead of the usual height two. They said if you had an exceptionally large, obvious two-tiered hill, then the bottom would be one, top would be two. That had a big change in the game because, and again, I think it's relevant. It means that they could put hills in people's deployment zones, and it wasn't a massive bonus because a lot of high-tier things, obviously playing the ogres, I plop my catapults on hills to try and shoot them, but of course all the ogres are height two, so my catapults would only be height two on my height one hill, so lines of sight were very quickly boxed by siege breaks and things like that. But yeah, Red Blasters, he shoved all three of them together on one flank. And, you know, the pillage markers were happily, you know, scattered around. And during the game, he just proceeded to sort of drive them down one flank. I put my regiment of skeletons there, and I think maybe the regiment of revenants there to sort of, you know, take them out. But my plan was to walk up to them, hit them to, you know, because they're all close together. One would blow up and damage the two others quite a bit, and then it should be a small matter of, you know, hopefully I'd have two regiments left who might be engaged, and they could take out all the blasters. One would still be alive if damaged, but there'd be nothing up there, and could sit in an objective, and that's how I could end this game. And no, couldn't blow the buggers up, no matter how many times I charged them, hit them, and did anything, never caused any damage because there were so many hedges in the way, I was always disrupted and never getting hit. And they just slowly drove around my flank, and it was only in the final turns when he realized he wasn't going to get anything else that he decided to blow up my two skeleton units based there, and then proceeded to park his final bomb around 4 inches away from one of my catapults in the end zone on an objective which I just, you know, left before I come and get it and didn't have time, and it just sat there on the, just staring at my catapult.
So how'd the game finish up?
Well, in the end, it was a loss to me. So what in short happened is on my right flank, I had my two regiments of Revenant Cavalry supported by one of my worms. I went in against the Red Goblin, the Red Goblin Tears, and his two boomers, and the boomers placed behind it, so they could shoot over the top. In a really slow, messy grind, I managed to, between my units, my catapults, wipe out everything on the flank, but was in turn wiped out, and he had one regiment of the siege breakers. He had two siege breakers, which were in the middle, with his shooters behind, and one regiment came over in the end, so Horde came over and finished everything off when everything was wounded, and finished in my center, which was my formation, which I pretty much took the entire tournament, was my horde of spearmen was in front with my trolls sort of hiding behind them, waiting for the moment to pop out. And I managed to have a good long-distance surge and pot over to the shooters. I was very happy. Okay, the game swung in my turn. I had lots of units left on the table. And then in short order in a turn, he's hit things with siege breakers and doors disappeared in the combat, nothing hot. And I just didn't have enough units left to take objectives. And I think I had one objective, he had two, one of which was held by that damn bomb. And I lost, so 6-14 to my opponent. So slightly more damage, but not enough to make you dead. But great game.
How about game two? Who'd you play? What were they rocking?
I played, it was Matt James, and we were playing Push. He brought orcs. So he brought two regiments of Moraks, two regiments of Orcs, a horde of Axe. He brought a special character orc, which hits on 2+, which name I forget. Then he had two regiments of Gore Riders, one of which I remember had the, I think one had the potion of the caterpillar, and one had +1 speed. He had two regiments of Goblin Flags, the Goblin King on a chariot. And I forget if he had one or two war drums. I think he might have had two war drums poking about. But he only had the one inspiration just from that special character.
How'd the game go?
He set up with sort of a refuse flank. So again, very heavy terrain. It was actually the board I played on in the first game. So we had this huge impassable house, sort of impassable farm team, which really split the board in, you know, 2/3 one side and 1/3 side. Lots of hedges cast about. And some trees are dotted around the middle, cutting down lines of sight. I, turns out, didn't know how to play Push. I was convinced that you had to get all your tokens and tokens in the middle into your opponent's half to score. This had never been a problem for me, because I would always play Forces of Nature. So by end of the game, I was always in my half. So I was determined from the point of go to walk my slowing, shambling, and quite squishy army into my opponent's half, and I was confused why he wasn't trying to do the same to me. So yeah, it didn't go too well. Basically, he in the centre he put his axe horde and his two regiments of Morak, and it was more two regiments of Morak. He had those two regiments of Orklings, and they were supported by a drum. To the left-hand flank, he shoved all of his fast-moving things. We had two regiments of Gore Riders, his special character guy, and the Sniffs and the Goblin King. And then he left his right flank completely open with nothing deployed. And in return, to face his left, I think I put my Revenants and I put my, I think one Worm King on Worm. My center was Spearmen. I chaffered some skeletons with my Troll Horde behind, which had the tokens on, and also my Regiment of Revenants and another Worm. It turned out to be a big in the middle. A sort of meet and mash in the middle. I had my Lycus on the far right flank where no one else was. And I only realized the second after the game started that I really should have put at least one token on him, and he could have slowly walked in the other to the opponent's side, hidden by the big house, and would have been an automatic 2 points. But it was just sort of a hard one to learn. So he went around the flank and caused a regiment of Moraks and Orklings to spin around and try chase him for most of the game, which didn't really do so much. In the middle, everything sort of mashed into each other, and it was kind of a grinding blow-for-blow between the Orcs and the Undead. But once again, I learned to the other lads in the first one, Undead really didn't do that much damage, and even when the worm, the Kings go in on their giant worms, they just don't, because they're only 9 attacks hitting on 4, really don't do that much at all. I had more on the left flank, where I took out the two regiments of Gauls. I managed to land a catapult on one regiment or two and take that out from long range. I think the other one I managed to get, I got a charge off on it, but I managed to take that out. I think it was probably by surging cavalry into it. And then it's turned into sort of a slow grind, because I think I was fighting in a swamp against the Goblin King and the Two Regiments Sith. I basically spent most of the rest of the game with my Revenant King and my Revenant Cavalry trying to kill off these goblins so they can come into the center where all of the loot counters were, and to try and get hold of them so I could get more scoring points. I only actually played very well and knew what to pick up the loot counters and when not to, and place them in a way that it was really hard for me to get hold of them. But right near the final turn, I had my zombie trolls who were a bit damaged, but not hugely damaged, and they had three tokens on. I think I was in a winning position where a good amount, at least two more tokens than my opponent. But I was convinced I had to get him into my opponent's half. So this injured unit of squishy zombie trolls went running into my opponent's half, hoping to survive, and of course got charged in the face by the regiment. Morax, which took it out in short succession, grabbed the three tokens, and then it came to anyway. A good, easy win for my opponent. Although I think overall I caused more damage, so it was another 6-14 in my opponent's favour.
Excellent. How about game three?
Three was against Alex Lover, again against Orcs. This tournament I played Orcs three times. I've never played them before. And so actually I've learned a lot about them. So he had, he had an interesting fight. He was supposedly quite new to the game, but he played it very well. He had Axe Hordes and a Great Axe Horde. Then everything was in threes. He had three Gore Rider regiments, three Troll regiments, three Drams, and three Flaggers. And I don't think anything had any magic items. It was minor re-roll the dice ones. And again, another quite a piece of impassable terrain in the middle. Lots of hedgerows on this one, which had quite an effect of sort of funneling us where we could fight or where charges could be got. So we're playing invade, and I decided that it was best to split my army in two and try and sneak around, sort of hold them in the middle and put my more expensive things on the flank, and my idea was sort of to hopefully hit in halfway in the middle, and then we might basically get into the scoring points and then, in their time, come around and hit in the back. All my catapults were up on hills so they can get as good of shots as I thought they could. In return, he put his two troll hordes in the center. He put two axe hordes to the right, supported by his Gore Rider regiment. He put the Great Axe Horde on the left with another Troll Horde and two Gore Rider regiments there. And then he sort of scattered the flaggers and the drums, one behind each of the big hordes. Again, this was another exercise in learning of the efficiency of skeletons to do anything. He came up very quickly. I think I lost every turn to go first of every dice roll. So everyone was, he came across very fast, charged across was quickly good. And I sort of moved up my first turn to try and make as many traps as possible to meet him. Missed pretty much everything. I'd skeletons and spearmen horde, falls behind, and my revenants behind as well, so sort of a tier of defense. I'd put on each flank, I put one of my Revenant Kings and Undead Worms, and I'd also put on my left two regiments of Revenant Cav, and I think also hiding around on the left, and I forget what I put on the right. Whatever else I had in me was sort of plodding around on the right, trying to run interference with my pulling around in the middle. Basically, he came on for centre. He bounced off my army to begin with, and then I surged in and tried to get flanks back, and I generally bounced off his. I don't think I broke much of anything. The drums had a huge effect in this game, really stopping him from wavering. So even when I was backing up relatively high damages, it never really slowed his pace, and his hordes just chopped through my much weaker units. I'll be causing 4 or 5 of it, and he'll be causing 12 at a time. So very soon, by sort of go free, it was obvious how it was going, and all I could really do was sneak through his army, because the holes I formed in his army by his units busily butchering the rest of my army, to get, you know, a worm rider less and the other odds sort of into his prime bone, just to avoid them being brutally killed, whilst the rest of my army was slowly taken apart piece by piece. I think he only lost two units, probably, I think, regiments of Gaul riders, which I managed to take out, and everything else was in good condition. By the end of the game, I think all the trolls regenerated. I mean, he had some fantastic rolls for regeneration, sort of regenerating 7-8 wounds at a time. He'd done a couple of games in a row. And yeah, before I knew it, everything of his was happily setting up camp in my deployment zone, and I had a scattering of units left which were hung up in his deployment zone. So a big win for him, 18-2 in his favor.
All right, so you're sitting, where are you sitting, 1-2 for the day?
I'm sitting 3-0 in the day. I had 3 straight losses from my first experience of the undead, and I went away and had a bit of a think about what was happening.
Well, there you go. Now, they played 3 games on the first day. So after you're running 0-3 and you had a chance to go and relax and blow off some steam and figure out what was going on. So what were the evening festivities, so to speak? Was there anything special going on? Everybody get together? What was the vibe?
Yeah, we all went over to the pub across the road, which I think Nick Williams had organized, really booked out for us. And it was great, actually. Really good atmosphere. Everyone was after going over there, you know, talking about the games of the day. There was lots of drinking going on, but it was really great, like, really friendly, chill atmosphere. I think me and Nick and Spud were probably amongst the lot. I think it all sort of started to wind down the right morning. We basically went down there from the afternoon, and again, just had a really good time, and it's just nice that a lot of us now, we've been, because it's sort of, you know, smaller scene, because England's a smaller place, we've been meeting up together for 3 or 4 years at various tourneys, and it's actually quite nice. I think it's the first time we had a 2-day Kings of War tourney, at least 2-day, which I'd ended, I think. And so it was, it was great. We've played lots of good games, which were great to begin with, but let's go after 2 or 3 hours, everyone was far too drunk for that. And then then there was the infamous opening of the door competition, which I think Darren might have suggested, and that pretty much entertained us for an hour and a half, which gives you the idea of how drunk we were by that time. Like I said, a great evening of just chatting, catching up with people, and, you know, laughing, commiserating about everyone was, of course, as you would do, proper stories of how the day went and trying to guess who would be at the top near the end. And not being too cheerful about his original games with Dan, I think, early in the day, which set him back, but he still quietly confident about how it was all going to go the next day. And Dan arrived absolutely hammered, which was impressive. But then what was even more impressive, he then continued to drink for like another 4 hours, which was just amazing. And so, like I said, that he could even function the next day is just one of the miracles and mysteries of that kind.
Well, he got a lot of training at Lone Wolf, evidently, on how to hold the liquor there. There you go. See, so, well, that's cool. Well, luckily MTV, or maybe unfortunately MTV, was not available there for the good time that was had at the pub. So, but circling back to MTV, that's what I call Mantic Television. They were doing some of that. Did you see that recording going on, or was it just Rob running around with a cell phone?
I did see Yellow's cameras going around with, you know, setting up cameras and cell phones and you know, recording armies and bits of games. I did see them talking to a few people. I think the people that they were talking to might have been more top tier gamers. After my first day, as I finished on a marvelous 16 points out of a possible 60, they weren't in a rush to interview me.
So you're sitting 0-3, Sunday morning, you wake up, who do you get to face? I mean, obviously, if you're 0-3, it's time to club a baby seal.
So I ended up playing this guy who actually spent a bit of time drinking with the night before. Frederick, so he's one Norwegian guy, came over. So I'm going to attempt his last name, but I apologize already because Fred was a really nice guy. Frederick Felsen. Yeah, now I'd basically gone away at night and realised, okay, you know what? I've been trying to play my army kind of like my force of nature, where I'm always sneaking up, trying to sneak up the sides, maneuver people, move my big monsters in positions to get strong flank charges and try to power through people and turn around and go around the rear. And I basically changed my plans. I'd also been a bit too over reliant on the catapult and realised that they were useless. And so I changed the way I played to view the Revenant Kings of Undead Worms, instead of actually them being the main units which were going to break my opponent's lines, to actually use them as height four surges and, you know, unkillable blocks. When I wanted to block something up, I'd shove them somewhere where they would, you know, people charging would have to be disrupted, and I sort of thought, well, you know, you break on a 20 and you've got good armor and you've got, so I thought that would work much better. And then I sort of used a lot of view armies actually, well, I've got four surges in it, so I could probably do some quite good long distance surging if I pulled them all close together instead of scattering them along the length of the board, and maybe I can catch people out for doing weird things. So Fred, we were playing loot. And Fred also brought an undead army. Like me, he had woefully overestimated the ability of the Balefire Catapult and brought two of them along. He brought a horde of whites, a regiment of mummies, a revenant king of undead steed, a regiment of revenants, a regiment of wraith, two regiments of skeleton archers, a lycanus, and a horde of werewolves. So, three loot tokens, one in the center, one on the left, one on the right. It's pretty standard. Again, quite a briefly terrained board. We're playing one of the realms of games, which are realms of battle, so we both had hills in our deployment zone with a decent passable terrain along the center, again, splitting the board roughly into third on the other. A good number of swamps scattered around and some forests. So on his left, he put his Revenant King, he put his Regiment of Revenants, and he put his Regiment of Wraiths. In the center, he put his skeletons, some skeleton archers in the front, and his mummies next to them. And behind them, he put two regiments of skeleton archers in front, and behind them he put his horde of whites and his regiment of mummies, and then on the right-hand flank he put his horde of werewolves with the Lycanus. So opposing the wolves and the Lycanus, I put down two regiments of my Revenant Cavalry with both undead worm riders close to them. I then put my block of horde of skeletons next to its regiment of skeletons, and hiding behind them and slightly to the side of was my regiment of revenants and my zombie trolls. Then on the far left side, all I put down was my Lycanus and my revenant king, with my idea basically being, if I could hold up his flank and all the points he had there and stop it seeing on the piece of impassable terrain, I could grab the objective on the right for a strong advantage, hold it at the center, and then basically turn around and grind into the center take out everything on flanks, charges, hold to the objective that he'd have won. And that's roughly how it went. He got first turn again. Throughout the game, our catapults exchanged useless fire at each other and did absolutely no impact really on the game or anything worth taking home. He moved up his werewolf horde, my kind of too far. He didn't realise how far I could surge that side, and actually everything sort of advanced slowly apart from the werewolf, which, you know, ended up sort of 17 inches away from my my revenant revenant cavalry. So I just moved up the surge as far as I can and then brutal surge at it, and of course went straight in as a charge, and it really put him on the back foot because they got the charge off. They did quite a lot of damage to the werewolves, I think wavering them as well. So all he really had running around that side was a Lycanus facing my worms and my other unit revenant cavalry. A Lycanus basically nipped through a hole and then got behind my lines, and I spent sort of a go trying to chase it and manoeuvring in a way to sort of, you know, make its life annoying and sort of surging catapults out the way of it. But then basically decided to let it go. And apart from that, the rest of it really worked as I planned, although it did take longer than I thought. I very quickly crushed the right-hand flank and then went into the centre where a bit of a scrum had emerged between I'd taken out his skeletons and was trying to grind through his whites. I'd managed to get a long-range flank charge in with my undead trolls using one of the Revenant Kings and the Necromancer hiding out in the middle, which he didn't expect. He managed to do quite a lot of damage to the mummies, but I think in turn, I forget where they were charged by, but I'm pretty certain they sort of exploded and died. And I think he also had a what's it called? The Necromancer and the undead Leech King floating around, so he equally did some surges and managed to take out trolls. But yeah, but come near the end, it basically, I managed to hold up his, I think he only went quite to the end, the mistake he made on the left hand flank by he kept his horse around, desperately trying to kill my Lycanus and my King, because I kept on not countercharging him or being wavered, so I couldn't countercharge. And we were standing once again, we were standing in the swamp where the fight was going. He just couldn't hit me enough and was losing his fungal starch. He just couldn't really cause enough wounds to me. And I kept on moving out way and trying to be as annoying as possible. And the only sort of go for me was, oh, there's the main battle going on, I've got to try swing around the flanks. And he never got there. It did come down to. I had the last turn, and I had 32 seconds left on the clock when I finished. But I managed to basically get into this, using my reverence mainly to surge, finally piled in the last go to get his whites, which were walking off with the objectives, the marker I needed to get. And I spent two or three turns trying to get kill them, and he kept on healing them back up, and I could not break them. But finally, in the last go, everything piled in with everything I've got, you know, to the flank and sides and long distance charges coming in with Revenant Cavalry, and took the token, wiped out most of his army in the process, and a strong win to me of 18-2.
So you got on the board.
I got on the board. I managed that first game to do more points than I did in the entire of the day before.
It always feels good to get that first win of the tourney. So, all right. So you're sitting 1-3 and rolling into game 5. So how did that go?
So that was against Mark Berry. He brought orcs. We're playing Dominate. He brought a Crudger on Wing Slasher, an Axe Horde, a War Drum, a Flagger. I think he brought a Horde of Gore Chariots, which was unusual to see. He brought a Crudger on a Gore. A regiment of more axe floating around, and a troop of more axe. There was a giant, a troll bruiser, a regiment of trolls, and I think a regiment of gore riders as well. So, again, with lots of terrain, lots of hedges, and a head in the middle, and the other and just off to the side, and a very large, impassable building almost dead center. So the it took up at least half the dominated area. And then on the right-hand side, it was basically an open expanse with a hedgerow going across the middle and scattering of woodlands here and there, but they were in our deployment zones. It didn't play a huge part in the game. I shoveled my catapults down early on the right-hand flank, which meant he avoided putting anything there whatsoever. So really was focused in the center and on the left. So in the center was spent on his infantry. So Axe Horde and the Morax and the Trooper Morax and the Giant was there. He had the Quadron Wings Slasher, of course, hanging around in the center. And he next to them, as he sort of moved from the center to the left, there was the regiment of Trolls and Troll Bruiser. There was the Gore Rider regiment, which was, I think, hanging around behind them. And then right on the far left was the Horde of Chariots. Again, in response, on the far left, I put my two kings on Undead Worms and the Revenant King on Steed. I put my two regiments of Revenant Cav, and in the center, as before, with the Undead Trolls behind them. My regiment of Skeletons were next to that, and behind them were the Revenants regiment. So then sort of the two-tier defense for Chaff in front. Lance was shoved out far on the right to try and see what he could annoy and do. I again lost first turn, so he moved quickly to try come across the board. He tried to get his Crudger and Wing Slasher in a position so he could hop over the piece of impassable terrain, the big building, to then flesh in my flank and get in my backfield. I zipped the Lycanus past it, and then my Lycanus actually managed to, I guess it's kind of a bluff his Axe Horde into spinning around, so I was all waiting in his flying Axe Horde, and he kept on turning this around, not advancing with it, trying to ensure that Lycanus wasn't in his flank. And to be honest, I think if the Lycanus went in, he would just he would have bounced, even if it was in the flank, wouldn't have done enough damage, and then in turn he countercharged and butchered by the Orcs. So it was kind of a bluff to try to hold up this Horde, which I didn't really want to deal with. I managed to position myself some hedges on the far left. I positioned my Revenant King in such a way that when his chariots charged me, obviously they would be disrupted, and I thought, okay, they're not going to kill him. But he was far enough across the hedge that when they bounced back, their front was in front of, didn't go back across the hedge. So I could then do a charge with my Undead Worm, which I was keeping in reserve. Again, I was using the three of them together before they got into combat to do lots of the long-distance surges and to sort of initiate combat when people had measured out that, you know, I wouldn't be able to get there. When his dragon, his slasher, came across from the other side of the parcel train of the big tower, I managed to turn my trolls, which I'd left there, to hit him in the face. And then over the course of 2-3 turns, I managed to kill that dragon, which wasn't like he caused a lot of damage in return. And I think near the end, my trolls were 11-10 damage, so an actual roll wouldn't have taken them off, but he just couldn't get it. And I managed to kill that Crudger, which really let the pressure off. There was one point in the center where my trolls were facing the wrong way, and his Morax came in and in quick succession. He cut his way through both my Horde and my regiment of Skeletons from the block. But he didn't do it fast enough, because by this time my two regiments of Revenant Cavalry and one of my undead worms had polished off everything on the left, so we're turning and again long distance surging and charging coming in and sort of closing around him on a dominate scenario. In the end, I managed to his Axe Horde really didn't get to do anything the game, so he just spent the whole game spinning on chasing my Lycanus, and through again, it came down, I think this game was also came down to the last and might have actually been, I think it came down to 31 seconds. It was very close to the end. And in my last turn, I managed to surge everything in weird shapes and ways that I managed to, you know, flank charge his drive and front charge and rear charge and take out a lot of units in sort of the proceeding to the end, get everybody ramming. So it was, again, a strong victory to me. And I think he only really took out my chaff. Everything else survived. So it was either an 18-2 in my favour or a 17-3 in my favour. But again, a strong win.
Oh, fantastic. So you're rebounding nicely here.
I referred to the plan as the deep submarine. And so I had to lose my way to the bottom to hit gold, and then I was going to fight my way back up.
There you go. So like a Muhammad Ali rope-a-dope, huh? You had to sit there and let him pound on you before you came out with that flurry of blows.
That was it. I fooled them into a false sense of security by sucking for a whole day, and then, and only then, did I surprise them.
There you go. So you're sitting on 2-3 going into game 6. So how'd you run in game 6?
The last game was against a guy called Jude Cosgrove, which it turned out by random chance is actually a cousin of a good friend of mine, a family which I've known ever since forever. So that was a small world. But anyway, he brought elves, and he brought a mostly shooty elf list. He had the Seaguard Horde with +1 to hit, the Archer Horde with Nimble. He had 2 regiments of Silverbeast Cav, a regiment of Palace Guard, 2 Bolt Throwers. He had a Lord on a Draken with Diadem Dragon Kind. He had a Standard Bearer, a Mage on Foot, I think Bane Chant, and he had a Mage in the Steed with Breath Attack. And we were playing Control. It was a very... very busy board. Lots of small houses. It was sort of playing through a small village, and the village had lots of, there's lots and lots of sort of height zero disrupting terrain, and then impassable terrain blocking lines of sight. And then there were a couple of forests. I think there was a forest almost perfectly in the centre, quite a big forest, and then there was a big forest in his deployment zone. I put my catapults in the column, put 1 on the left and 2 on the right. Jude was really scared of my catapults more than any other player, and spent a lot of the game desperately trying to avoid being in their lines of sight or within their range. So I've got reasonably astute in the previous 2 games of getting used to the habit of hitting people with catapults and then surging everyone into combat. So they were starting to be a bit more useful, as in they would do, do 3 or 4 wounds, then somebody would get surged into combat to finish them off. And actually, they were starting not so much to pay. I don't think they ever really came back. They never paid off their 300 points, but they were. I was learning how to make them more effective within the army I picked. So, what he did after he wiped from the catapults is he put. In the centre was his Archer Horde, which was Nimble, and on the far left was his Sea Guard Horde, and I think also on the far left was his Draken Lord. The 2 Bolt Throwers were on the left, and one was sort of centre. Yeah, one was sort of central. He had his Silver Bees, 1 on the left, 1 on the right, but sort of hiding behind the forest. And the Palace Guard were floating around again on left, because the buildings blocked the line of sight by 2 catapults on the right to his left deployment zone. So he was hiding out there desperately trying to make sure that I couldn't see where he was. I put my 2 regiments of Revenant Knights and my Undead Worm and my the Revenant King of Steed on my right-hand side. In the centre was a standard formation of undead, of skeletons with trolls and revenants behind it, a big arc. And on the far left was just a single catapult floating around with a Lycanus. The author and inventor put an undead worm who was slightly chiseled to the right center originally, sort of near my Revenant cavalry, but I quickly moved him across. And also the necromancer was sitting amongst the middle of my sort of standard anvil block, inspiring them. Like I said, I was quite surprised how much he moving his army around, trying to avoid my catapults. So I kept surging them so that they could get shots off. He had a regiment, he had a horde of dragon riders, so a regiment of commanders, which he didn't really do much. And I don't think he actually used them until the last turn. And they spent their entire game just hiding the ball. Move. So even though plus one to hit, they were usually only hitting on fives because they kept on moving around the flank and kept on turning them to change their view. So the elf shooting, it did have a result. It certainly weakened my units and take a couple of units off, but it wasn't as devastating as usual because kept on moving. He brought his Dragon Lord all the way around the left-hand side and he proceeded to chase my Arcanus about and sort of set him on fire repeatedly, but eventually got too close on my mate so that I could, as before, I could bring my my undead king across with my necromancer and a long distance surge of my chaff regiment into him, which was enough to cause a wound, so stop him flying. Both in this game and the previous game against the Thrasher, the new rule for disrupting flyers had a really big effect. It meant it was not easy, but it meant you could ask them and cause a wound. Then it was quite easy to pull them down. They couldn't escape. I mean, he still managed with it. Juzi had a good attempt to try and run away, you know, sort of turned and turned his 90 and ran off in a weird direction to try to avoid being caught. But I could do a long distance search of the trolls and, you know, really wipe them out. But it meant once they were down on the ground, for a better word, they'd taken a wound, it was relatively easy to pull down even quite powerful flies. So people were using them much more cautiously than I'd previously seen. So I think actually that was a good change there. So in the end, even though we're playing control, I started spreading my army out to take all the sections. So I saw he'd got almost his entire army had corralled in the top left board section from my view in his deployment zone, and he kept on retreating things away as my catapults kept the button to try to take pot shots at him. And I did a couple of disastrous charges trying to take out some silverweed capoots floating around the middle, and everything kept on missing attacks. So I lost an undead worm for, you know, almost wounds, and I lost, I think it was taken off for shooting, and then a Revenant King went in, and my Revenant Cavalry went in, and I killed it, but it was to the point that it completely exhausted my army, so I basically hid behind the forest, and by the end of the game, I was in control of four areas, including my central deployment zone, and he was in control of his deployment zone on the left, and he had and he had quite a lot left, I think, by the end. I think I was slightly damaged him because I'd taken out a few high points units. What he'd killed has been relatively low value, just especially taken out the chaff. But like I said, I think it was, in that case, was really that game. It was more about his perception of how dangerous my catapults were was far too generous, and it was meant to, I could sort of spread out, and then because I was building time behind, I can hardly control the areas relatively easily. And despite him being far maneuverable, I never really felt too threatened because he kept himself so very far away, but his blood of fire was equally blocked as mine. So it was another good win for me, 16-4 in my favor.
You ended up 3-3, perfectly mediocre on the weekend. That's impressive.
I ended being decidedly average, so I was quite good. Like I said, every game was a really good game. every game was really fun, whether I was being trounced or whether I was, you know, doing the trounce thing, and everyone was just a really nice time. I said there were six new players to me who I'd never played before, with six new armies I'd never seen before. So that was also really, really enjoyable.
You finished 32 out of 75. That's pretty good.
I'm very content with that. Like I said, after my first day, I feel like I must be fighting for the spoon. But considering that it's an army I'd never played before in any real way, I'd had a couple of practice games, you know, 6 months ago at around the 1,000, 1,500 points level when I was trying to put it together. But I think I had two practice games. I was very happy about how it turned out. And I think I learned a lot about how to play them. And like I said, certainly I've got some ideas for the future going forward about what I would replace to make it competitive. It was enjoyable just to play something. So after playing, you know, one army for the best part of 2 years, it was a nice change in and of itself.
Finished 32nd, three places above Jonathan Falks. So I don't know what to say to Mr. Falks, because you got him on paint by a mile, and then on top of it, now you're beating him on the table. This is not a good combination for Mr. Falks.
No, well, everyone knows. I'm dead or broken. They're well overpowered. That's what it is. Rules committee, change it. I'm content with finishing that way. I'm quite surprised because, you know, Jonathan Vanguard are really very good. So I haven't actually seen him at the end to find out what went wrong. But very very content with that standing, and I will certainly remind him next time I see him how well I did for Canada with my complete newbie fluffy undead army.
I'm sure he'll appreciate you asking about it.
Oh, I love it, yeah.
Think of it this way, though. This is your first event with undead. How do you think your placing would change if you would have ran the nature army?
I hope it'd been quite a bit. I've got now to the point where I can play quite impressive the nature army. It's one of those ones I think everyone would agree. The more you play with any army, unless any army is in King's War, the better you're going to get, just because you know what they can and can't do. Honestly, I'm very used to playing Forces of Nature style, or at least the style army I have. To that, my first two games, my own kept on correcting me when I was like, I'm going to move at the double through this difficult terrain. They go, no, just don't move like that. I'm like, oh, yeah. So they don't. I'm not Forces of Nature. I'm undead. I'm slow. So I think I would have hopefully done much better. I mean, like I said, because I actually think if I'd taken Forces of Nature, I probably would have had, as well as a better advantage, and I think it was a better army than we were playing. I think the way that the board was set up, with just so much terrain, there was, you know, a good 12 pieces on each board, it would have made things very easy or easier for me. As you know, I would have been able to, you know, really dictate when the fights were going to happen, and because I've got quite a fast army with a lot of vanguard, I would have been the opponent's half, and there were plenty to block my approach and hide in forests and things like that. So I think I would have done a lot better, but I'm not certain I would have had as much fun, to be honest.
You finished 3-3, though, with an army you barely played before. So, you know, what is your key to finishing 32nd?
My key to finishing 32nd, all those people out there aspiring to live undead to get to 32nd place. Scourging, to be honest. I think the big difference between day one and day two was just actually realizing that this one thing my army had plenty of, was surge. It had no hitting power. I had very little crushing strength, and where it was focusing things which only hit on 4+, had low numbers of attacks. So I really started focusing on pulling off weird charges people were not expecting. And when I pulled it together, I think I had something like, you know, surge 24 or surge 26 in my army with all of them pulling together. So I could really do peculiar things which people didn't see coming. And all I could pull off, you know, two or three surges and flank charges in a gun. I sort of get used to the idea of putting my, setting my army up for the surge in the following turn, or also orientating myself in a way where I could pull off strange, spinning a unit. So I would just be in, I'd hit their flank before I'd hit their front. Made sort of big differences. So, yeah, I mean, that's it. I've come to the conclusion that undead are actually the most maneuverable army in the game within 6 inches.
How is the painting standard? I know that's something that Lordy and I had talked about, but, we want to get your take on it. What did you think of the painting standard at Clash of Kings?
I thought it was really good, to be honest. There were some absolutely lovely armies out there. Most of I think there was only one army I saw which wasn't painted at all, and that actually was almost every, I think everybody I played, had fully painted army. Most were multi-based, and all to a good standard, to the point that actually there was no sort of one undercoat blobs there. And in the painting competition, there were some really lovely armies. But the guy who won the Mantic one, it was a guy from sort of this fantastic Sicilian army with sort of coastal theme and everything, really good little dioramas in each and every set. So I think that's something which actually is improving, notably from year to year, is the painting standards. And it's not... It's still not quite what it maybe used to be for Warhammer, or might be another game systems, but it's definitely improving year on year.
Were there any specific armies? You mentioned a few there, but over our recording, you've mentioned a few. But was there any armies that you were just like, wow, this is a really cool army?
Yeah, so the Egypt from Spain is the Syrian army. Looked fantastic. I'm sure that there'll be lots of photographs of it on the Mantic blog, hopefully at some time on the Facebook page. Really good dioramas, charging paladins in knights to ride down the skeletons, and all these sort of Eoli standing with waves crashing around them onto the cliffy coast. So that was really enjoyable to see. And there were some other ones which is just examples of good painting, and lots of fun themed goblin armies with tons of old Warhammer squigs and some bits of old hammer scattered around, which again really nice. Some lovely dwarf armies with sort of all the big data earth elementals, which are not the Mantic ones, they're the ones that sort of look like the dwarfs out of World of Warcraft and things like that. And again, yeah, so there was a scattering of armies. Unfortunately, I don't know people's names to name them, but. Yeah, I think the guy won the Mantic one was.
Give me your final thoughts on Clash of Kings.
I thought it was a fantastic tournament. I think the tournament organisers did a great job for just how big it was. It was also nice that I didn't hear any shouting or arguments when people break out. It was, despite its size and its obvious competitiveness, because people, there were a lot of people out there who wanted to win or place high. It was played in, good fun. Everyone was sort of laughing at the end. There was lots of jokes. It was a good, friendly feel of it. And I think it's huge success. It's amazing how good this team has grown in just a year. And 2 years ago, we were struggling to get enough people. I remember tournaments being cancelled all the time because there was nothing to play. So it's sort of a testament to the community and the Mantic how far we've come in such a short time. So, yeah, my huge appreciation and respect to everyone who had a hand in organising it, as well as to everyone who actually did that play there, because it was an absolutely fantastic time. I think everyone worked in some ways or large to make that.
So UK Masters, I was looking at the list, you're actually sitting 22. Not too shabby for a painter.
No, I'm content with my finishing. I had a couple of bad tournaments in the year where I wasn't necessarily playing too competitively. So not bad in the way that I didn't enjoy the score very highly. So I'm hoping next year to try and, with both, take both my force of nature and my undead, and make both, you know, a bit more competitive, to try and maybe sneak into the Masters in the following year. We'll see. Like I said, there's a lot of very good players. There's a lot of people who are sort of brand new, at least brand new to me, who are coming up and are placing very highly. So again, it's a scene where there's a lot of emerging competition, as well as just people jostling amongst the old guard, so to speak, such, you know, the Danny Allen, Nick and such. So I think it'd be a very exciting year next year, but fingers crossed, a big push for soft scoring.
What about the thought of actually setting up a painting Masters like we used to have in Warhammer?
I would obviously love to see something like that happen. I'm all for any competition which is going to encourage people to, you know, paint, convert, make as creative an army as possible, because I mean, that's the real, well, at least for me, more than anything else, is the joy of what Kings of War brings. You can really, you know, you can use whatever models you can make, whatever instruments you want them to look like, and with multi-basing, you can really let your imagination go. So I think if there were more competitions around to encourage people to do more and be more creative, and, you know, and reward people to, you know, for being more creative, it could only be a good thing, because I like to see nicely painted armies and playing against them. So yeah, I would be all for that. And who knows? I said it's really diversifying very quickly in the UK. I think Nick came back with some bright new ideas from his trips to America, and the same sort of, you know, Dan. I know they're all going over again next year, and it seems to take seed. So I'm hoping next year see some real diversity amongst the scene, and yeah, fingers crossed.
Well, how come we don't have you on the list coming over for Lone Wolf next year?
Alarmingly, my wife did actually say that when I broached the idea to her of going soft to America, she actually said, yeah, we could do it, as long as we tack on a holiday. So not going to team, but maybe 28, I can get my act together, and my kids will be a little bit old, my youngest will still be too young to go away for sort of a two-week holiday. But it might not be impossible. I think it might just happen.
Well, hey, let's get to some questions from your fans. First of all, did you know you had so many fans?
I had no idea I had so many fans. I've had a really good response whenever I put my models up, and people say some really lovely things. But yeah, it's nice to be appreciated. But I'm shocked and incredibly incredibly gracious that people like my model so much.
Well, let's start with John Hoyland, who I believe played Dwarves at the event. He was asking, how much planning goes into each multi-base, and how much of it is just spur-of-the-moment decision on what looks good?
I usually spend quite a bit of time thinking about how I'd like the unit to look a whole. I mean, I always, because of multi-basing, I think of each model as a whole. You know, each unit is, in my mind, a model with multiple models making it up. So I imagine how that's going to go. But a lot of, when it comes to actually placing the models, like I said, it's a bit of an organic process that make the bases and the models at the same time, and then tend to sort of detach all the models and completely paint and do the bases, then partly paint the models and reattach them, but finish them on, do all their, you know, final highlights when they're actually all glued in place on the finished base. It is a bit of a movable piece, and I am known to make, or I do sometimes make changes very near the end, but I'm like, no, I don't like that. That looks wrong. Let's swap all that around. You go here, you go there. Let's move that shield. Let's cut that head off, make it fit.
Jonathan Falks wants to know why you haven't built the display board. I mean, to be fair, maybe the answer is you don't need one. You can beat them without one.
Yeah, who needs a display board to help them win painting competitions, Jonathan? For shame. To be honest, it's really just been a matter of trying to get one, build one. So, you know, it's an awkwardness of carrying it around. But I'm thinking my undead, I've got an idea that I would. I'd make a nice display board sort of for a big spooky forest, and actually try to do a bit of sort of background scenic painting, sort of blend the cliffs in, like I sort of remember some old some old diorites from really old Hammer, early generation sort of Games Workshop. They had, you know, big scenic things going into the background and sort of the mountains from the forefront blending in from the actual 3D work for TV. So I might have a go at that, and it will either be lovely or it will be disastrous, and people will be able to tell by the fact whether or not I turn up with a display board at the end of the year as to how it's turned out. But yeah, the Undead might be my first, and if it works for them, I could see myself doing more.
Grant A from Twitter asks, why are you not on Twitter?
Because otherwise, who would help Darren keep his Twitter account up? I'd merely stay off for the benefits of Darren.
Well, to be fair, he needs all the help he can get.
Yeah, exactly. Poor man.
Your opponent Fred says hello. And why were you the only one to get any mileage out on Revenant Kings on Worms?
I think, again, it's sort of an underappreciated, like, I guess in the Undead list, they're not good at what you think they should be at, which is, you know, charging and fighting in combat. But for 190 points, they're very hard to kill. And height four surge is very useful. It means you will see over everything, and you can, that's one of the great bonuses of them. No matter where my opponent was or where my unit was, even if it was stuck around the back of them and no one else could see, because they're height four, they're really useful surge. Now, it's a lot, I guess, to spend on a surge, but when you also consider it a surge which is almost impossible to kill unless somebody, you know, really goes in for a very heavy unit, or frankly, not to mention this, if you move it in such a way that the enemy is going to be disrupted, so it's possible to, they will last games. It's pretty good points retention. I don't think it's a great unit. It's not a game winning unit itself, but it's certainly also very well sort of an anvil inspiring caster. It's a bit of a Swiss Army knife, actually. Just not one which will ever, I don't think it will ever get a job done by itself. It's kind of a supporting character. So I guess that's why playing Undead, most of the time you see two vampires on steeds or with Wings of Honey Maze, and you see two Revenant Kings. Who knows, maybe I'll start the crochet.
Swordmaster on Twitter wants to know how you paint so fast and to such a great level.
Coffee and panic. I don't usually paint particularly fast, although I have come up with a couple of methods for painting, which I could learn from the Undead. I sort of trialed them with my Force of Nature, but really took into them in the Undead for getting whole regiments together. So one thing is doing it as much as you can by batch painting and batch building. So I built my whole army without painting a single or barely painting a model in one go. So built all the bases, you know, built all the units, did all the conversions that I wanted. Everything was there in sort of, you know, gray and drab. And then I detached all the models from their bases and all the little pots. So I knew that which regiment had a pot, which had the Revenant cavalry in a pot, which had the spearmen in. And then I did all the basing in one go, which was, I got the entire basing of my army done in a day, and also means that they all look the same, so it went through the same method because I was doing it all at the same time. So that really sped things up. And for the painting, then white over the top, just get to, you know, sort of spraying from the top just to get a little bit of highlights to make the paint go on faster. I paint really bold, not to the hot base colors, and I paint it quite brightly. Then once the whole model's covered, the basic colours, I give it all of it from head to toe. Army painter, I think it's Army Painter Strongbow. When that's dry, and I glue all the regiment, all the models back onto their bases. So they're not finished, but they're all glued into place on the finished bases. So the next part, you need quite a steady hand to. The reason this is, I realised, especially with hordes, most of the troops you can't really see much of, especially by the second or third rank. You just sort of see the tops of their heads and bits of their spears. So it was waste effort painting it all as best as I could, only to find you couldn't really see it. And it's shaded anyway, got their quick shade on, and re-highlight And that's why, as I said, I start viewing the whole regiment as a single model. We highlight all of them in one go. Only the bitch can be seen. And that cuts painting regiments, their time, you know, in quarters. It really speeds up. Also, if you're doing non-metallic metal, I found it's really useful because then you can get reflect light point for the whole unit in the same place. So you paint each individual unit non-metallic, were light reflecting separate models. When you glue them on, they're all going to have light reflecting in different angles. For instance, if you paint the whole regiment at once, you can just imagine, okay, the light from, I'm not sure, the top left side. So you paint all of them the same, and the whole regiment has that consistency. So it makes it look that much sort of more cohesive and better. So that's what I adopted for this army. And it's worked really well, so I think I'll probably continue it.
So I'm going to summarize that. You basically paint all the models individually to kind of like a mid-level, attach them to the, you know, after they've been using dipped in the strong tone, you know, glue them to the base, and that's when you take them to the next level by painting the highlights on the areas that you can actually see. And if you're doing non-metallic metals, you do it that time too, so that the light hits the whole unit and you can make sure it's in the right spot on every model. That's great, great, great way to do it.
Yeah, it certainly beds up.
Final question. Are you ready, sir?
Yeah, ready when you are.
So Lordy wants to know when you'll do a commission for him.
Yeah, I did too, but I'm not certain if I'm going to be doing commissions anytime soon. I'd love to. I really enjoy doing them. It's just finding the time with everything else, with kids and work and life. Basically, when my children are around 14 and are no longer desiring of my attention. Teenagers, they just left alone. I'm open for business.
Yeah, so Lordy, I guess the answer is you need to up the what you're willing to pay, I guess.
That's it. He can bribe me. Well, I think I've got I would love to do more, especially for Darryl. He's such a cool dude. But I think that for now, I'm just going to infuriate him by painting models and put him on Facebook, and I'll supply him infinite Twitter feed for free. That's a fair compromise.
That's right. You keep him in you're a fine source of Twitter followers for him.
That's it. Yeah.
Well, Chris, I just want to thank you for chatting with us tonight. I know it's been a long one, but we appreciate your time giving us your feedback on Clash of Kings, UK Masters, answering the many, many, many fans out there, a few of their questions. Very, very fortunate that you were able to join us. We appreciate it.
No, man, thanks for listening to me waffle on for many an hour. And it's always great to come on.
Well, that's going to do us tonight. Until next time, keep countercharging.
Thanks for listening. And we'll see you next time on Countercharge. Please let us know what you thought of the show by emailing us at counterchargepodcast@gmail.com, on Twitter at countercharge15, or by posting on our episode thread on the discussion forum found on manticgames.com. If you enjoy the show, you can help others find out about it by leaving positive reviews on iTunes. Until next time, keep countercharging. Music is a composition of Kevin MacLeod and is licensed under Creative Commons.
Hello, I'm Aubrey, and this, as always...
Don't look at the camera.
This, as always, is working.
Watch what I do. Welcome to another board game cave review with Aubrey and Working. Aubrey, how are you doing tonight?
Good.
Good? What are we going to review tonight?
We're going to be reviewing Mr. Pop the Pig, as I like to call him, Mr. Chow. That's
what happened to his thing here? Back door. All right, so Pop the Pig, for those who don't know, is a mass market game that's available at Toys R Us, Walmart, everywhere, Target.
Yeah.
And it's basically a pressure luck kind of game where you've got some color-coded hamburgers, you roll a six-sided dice that have different colors, and it tells you to draw a... say, purple hamburger, and on the bottom of the hamburger is a number, and that number corresponds to how many times, you know, once you feed him the hamburger, you've got to push his head down, and which that fills up his tummy full of air, and eventually it pops the pig.
Yes.
So what do you like about this game?
It's funny how it pops. It's funny how it pops, and I also want to show how to set him up.
Okay.
So,
Here's a question for you. It's pretty random, so...
Yes, also a game similar to this called Guessing Gus, which I saw on YouTube.
Guessing Gus?
Yes.
So it's another game where you draw and you do something to something and then it pops?
Yeah, it's basically feeding him.
Okay. And what are you feeding Gus in that game?
Like junk food.
Junk food. Well, we don't eat junk food.
And then his tummy, the inside of him, has a balloon. So when you feed him too much, the balloon inflates. So it sounds like a gas noise. So he's
farting.
Yes.
Is his name Gassy Gus?
Gassing Gus.
Oh, okay. You're pretty gassy. You don't like my jokes?
No.
Okay. All right. Well, the game is pretty good. It's made by Goliath, and it's for ages four plus, and it's for 2 to 6 players. It is good. Random, so you don't really have a lot of decisions to make. But it is fun.
It's one of those luck games where it's not like Doodle Quest where it depends on your skills. It's like one of those luck games like Uno. It depends on what card.
Well, and that's probably why it works good for little children, because it is luck based and you don't have to make skill. You know, you don't have to have skill or make decisions on how to play the game.
Okay, so I'm going to show you how to set them up. So the first thing you want to do, of course, is put down the one with the lock. You want to put his shirt pieces down. You want to put them down at the same time to make sure that the clip piece goes.
So once you've deflated his belly by pushing the tail over, you're folding his belt. You're hooking his belt back up.
So you want to push that down.
Right.
And it inflates his tummy.
Uh-huh.
And then, so this is where you push on.
Right.
It's really rubbery, so you can push. And then in the back, you must put this little latch, which working is
like
putting in right
you
now.
You guys can see that. And that door in the back is where you can unload the hamburgers.
And it's so...
You can also store them there, which is kind of cool.
Yes, which makes it to where...
And then the last thing you got to do?
Fold
his arms down so he's ready to eat.
So I think we should play a game of this
to show them
how it works. In the box, the box looks really cool. Like the Papa Pig, it has its buttons coming off. Really cool on the side. Because it makes sense, because if you look closely at his shirt, he has two white buttons molded on.
All right,
and he has his tongue out like he's a dog.
Yeah, because he's hungry. So you basically have four different color hamburgers. You got red, yellow, green,
and your number
and purple.
Choices are from 1 through 4.
Right, and basically the way it works is you draw...
One, missed turns, and ones are the best numbers to get, and 4 is the worst number to get.
All right.
So I'm going to explain the dice. The green one means you pick a hamburger with green lettuce and a green top.
All right. And if it's yellow, it's yellow, number. Purple, purple, red, red. But then they also have a symbol that shows all four colors. What does that mean?
They also have two more symbols. It's like green, green patty, purple, purple patty. But there's two symbols that are not like those. This color one has each corner is one of the colors. Purple, yellow, green, and red, which are all the color patties. And basically, if you roll that, you get to choose any of these patties.
Right.
It doesn't matter.
And you guys can see the number, like this one is the number 4.
Yes. And there's also this one, which is just a white burger with the black X. And that means you lose your turn. As I said, like,
you know,
black missed turns are the best things to get.
Right, because that's pretty good, because it means you don't have to take a turn.
Yeah.
You won't pop the pig on a turn you miss.
Yes. The main point of this game is to try not to pop the pig. So.
Well, let's stop talking. Let's get playing, kid.
So, I'm going
to
roll the...
Wait, how come you get to go first?
I don't know.
You don't know?
I got a missed turn.
All right, my turn. So I'm going to pick purple. And I got 3.
So, we're going to show you how to pump.
So, I'm going to put us in there. And then I'm going to go 1, 2, 3. Your turn.
And then, as you can see later, his belly
will
start.
Yeah, you can actually see his belly is starting to pop a little bit.
We'll put him at the side.
All right,
so it will be
Bri,
easier for you to see.
Your turn. Pick a color.
I got 4. Yeah, I'm probably going to lose because, as I said, 4.
Yeah, she's no good at this game, guys. No good at all.
Yes, but it is a luck game, so what can you do?
Right.
It's a luck game.
I'm gonna go yellow.
See,
ooh, I got 3.
If you got this game and you feel his tummy when you feed him the burgers, he actually kind of lifts his belt lay up.
Oh yeah, he's getting nice and fat.
Yeah, you can see that.
Yep. Roll it.
I got a green 3. Now he's.
I got a 4 yellow, so we'll do that. Your turn.
I will get to this.
Oh, you're totally going to lose now. Two red.
Hopefully.
I get to miss a turn. That means I'm going to win. Oh. Red, huh? Three. Uh-oh. This could be a problem. He's getting pretty fat.
Yeah, as you can see, his stomach. Yeah. Later on the game, you can kind of see that his stomach, if you have this game and you feel his stomach later on the game, it's going to feel really squishy.
Keep going.
And, yeah.
Green, huh?
Green.
And I got red. I got, go ahead. And I got one. Your turn.
If like.
So pushing down his head pushes air into his belly, and that's what. Hey! She has popped the pig, and that means she is the loser.
Yeah, so as you can see, his stomach is very rubbery.
Yeah, it's like yours.
If you can hear that.
Oh, we can hear it. All right.
Then
well, that's
what you do. I get this the wrong way, though.
Yeah.
And then his stomach. Bing.
Absolutely.
Fine.
Well, that was another board game review from the Board Game Cave with Aubrey and War King. Aubrey, got any final thoughts?
Pig out. And
all right.
Also, yes, burger party.
Sounds like a plan. Well, until next time, keep playing board games.